Berkey, how are you, sir?
Good, guys. How are you?
Good. Perry and I were just kind of kicking around, and a lot of our listeners have been jumping in as well, about favorite TV show theme of all time. Do you have one?
Yes.
What would you go with?
Ride.
Young Clint Eastwood, right?
Clint Eastwood, yep. Yeah.
Was that your
go-to
show?
Were you a Western guy, Berkey? Was that like a Bonanza and those kind of shows? Was that you?
Yeah, my grandpa loved Westerns. And I was the only kid he would let watch TV with him because I was the only one that would sit still. And there's 10 kids in my family, and I was the only one would be allowed to watch with him. But he loved Bonanza, The Virginian, Rawhide. But there's a whole bunch of them then. Back then, Maverick, I mean, a little later, but there was one, Steve McQueen was a bounty hunter in one. I forget that one. He had carried a sawed-off rifle. There's a bunch of them.
Are you still a Western fan? Do you like your Western movies,
yeah,
then, I'm assuming? Where would you put, what would you put as your top Western movie? I love my Westerns from back in the day.
I mean, I have to think about it, but Hang 'Em High was a great show.
Yeah.
You've had some exciting holidays. Have you kind of taken that, let's go to the ranch and spend a week at a ranch? Has that ever been on your to-do list, or have you done that?
Well, Jennifer and I took Brendan and Molly to a dude ranch up near Ashcroft, and it's a famous one. I can't remember the name of it, but and I was dreading this, right? Like me and horses. I like horses, but I'm not. It sounded like the worst 3 days in my life. And I got there, and the guy takes one look at me and goes, how much do you weigh? I said, about 240. He said, you can't ride a horse here if you're over 225. I'm like, yes. So my cell phone, the only place that worked was by the pool. So Jennifer would go riding with the kids, and I would sit by the pool and make calls and drink beer. She was sour. It was great.
See, I feel like you would have needed a piece of grass and a 10-gallon hat just to kind of sit there and spit all day long as well. Would have been perfect for the cowboy look.
Yeah, no, it turned out to be a great vacation. I took Brendan trout fishing in Burns Lake, and we caught a bunch of trout. That was fun.
Your best fishing story. Sorry, we're going to get to sports at some point, but you know the situation, and I think a lot of people appreciate when we have conversations with some of our guests where we hear a little bit. Bertuzzi and Jovo were taking callers and texts from people. You are an avid outdoorsman. I know a big part of it, hunting or fishing. What's the best fishing story you've had, your most prized catch?
Well, last summer, I've gone to Langara Lodge for 25, 30 years now. I think my first year would have been 1990, and I've gone every year since but three. So what's that, 27 years, something like that. And I've had 100 great stories from there because Langara, it's not just the fishing, it's beautiful. The scenery's beautiful, and you see humpback whales and sea lions and porpoises and eagles everywhere, peregrine falcons. So it's a great place even when the fishing is a little bit slow, which isn't very often. I took Jeff Sanderson up there last year, and he caught a 77-pound Chinook, which is a monster fish. But my best day fishing was I was the GM of the Hartford Whalers. And we were terrible. We were awful. We played Tampa. And I can't remember. I think we lost because I was really sour. And I drove across Florida to my mom and dad's place and stayed there, slept for about 3 hours. And then I rented chartered a boat out of Fort Pierce, Florida, on the East Coast, about a 40-footer. And I get to the boat. I had a pouch of Red Man chewing tobacco and a case of Budweiser. And the guy says, where's the rest of your party? And I said, start driving. So I caught 32 fish, including a 55-pound mahi-mahi. I was fighting fish all day. It was just a fantastic day. I got sunburned, probably had too much beer. It was a great day, and I was all by myself. And I needed that day. I needed to get away from my team for a day and not think about hockey.
I appreciate the honesty. Brian Burke with us here on Sportsnet 650. Let's bring it back here to what's happening in the here and now right now. As it's been 2 weeks since the NHL officially shut things down or put things on hold for the time being in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic that is sweeping the world. Brian, I mean, there's been talk. I mean, I guess there was a conference call the other day, NHL officials asking teams about availability for arenas in August. I mean, what sort of, I guess, how viable is it or how tricky is it when you're starting to look at trying to push something all the way to that? And I get everybody wants to make it, but I mean, you look at some of these southern markets. I mean, how much of a concern does ice become in 2020, or is that still as much of an issue as we'd talked about in years past?
Well, I think the league is doing exactly what they need to do. I think they're showing great leadership. We all want to finish the season.
Sure.
And if we can't finish the season, which I think there's highly unlikely we're going to finish those regular season games, I think those are gone. But we all want to award a Stanley Cup if we can do it with integrity. And so I think the league is showing great leadership, which is basically same thing baseball's doing, same thing football's already started to do, same thing the NBA's doing, which is, are there buildings where we can play? How late can we play without affecting the integrity of next year? So if we're going to lose a season, I want to make sure next season is complete and done properly. So you wait. The authorities will tell you when you can start playing in empty arenas or small group workouts, whatever. The authorities will tell us what we can do. But then if there's buildings available, yeah, I want to play. If we play till August, people say, well, then the season starts in October, we're going to be exhausted. I got news for you, folks. There's only four teams playing in the last two rounds. Everyone else is watching. And there's only two teams playing in the last round. And so it's not, you know, like the year we won the Cup, we played our last game June 9th, but there's only us and Ottawa playing. And the round before that, there was only Buffalo and Detroit in there. So everyone else was watching on TV. So it's entirely feasible to do this, what they're talking about. They don't have to play best of sevens. They don't have to do that. Best of five in the first round, then two best of seven. The one thing I think they need three rounds. For it to have integrity, they need three rounds minimum.
Is the difficulty for GMs right now, and we had Jim Benning on last Friday, hey, the fans want it, and what you're talking about, they'll take whatever they have as far as it's a Stanley Cup with integrity. Is the difficulty and the challenge right now for the NHL all that off-season stuff? With free agents on July 1st, with draft. Is that the more complicated part of this sentence than it is if we get a tournament going for the Stanley Cup?
It's all a function of negotiation. So it's all a function of how reasonable both sides are going to be. Number one thing is we got to figure out if we can finish the season in some fashion. That's number one. And that's going to require some flexibility on everyone's part in terms of free agency, draft, combine. They just canceled all those things or postponed all those things yesterday. Okay, so it's not that day. It's going to be another day. Is that the end of the world? No. Is it cool the way we do our draft? We have the best draft in pro sports. Kid turns, kisses his mom, hugs his dad, hugs the agent, kisses his girlfriend, walks up on the stage. It's the coolest draft in the world. And it would suck if we have to do it, you know, in a conference room somewhere back and call the things in the picks into the draft. But if we have to this year, we have to. We have to adapt. This hasn't happened in 100 years. So if we got to do the draft differently, we do the draft differently. What's the big deal? If free agency starts September 1st instead of July 1st, what's the big deal? Last time this happened was 100 years ago, folks. We got to be flexible. I think this is all doable once the authorities give us a green light to play.
You went through a scenario, I guess, well, 15 years ago now when the NHL finally resumed after the canceled season in 2005. I mean, it was a scramble to kind of get everything back up and running, but there was the scaled-back draft in Ottawa that year, right, where they wanted to get the photo op with Sidney Crosby, where it was the Crosby draft in 2005, but that was the year that the season had been canceled, so it was kind of a scaled-back version of the draft that was held in Ottawa, where I think the one takeaway I always remember, Brian, is you holding a scrum outside the draft floor afterwards, and I think it was Pierre LeBrun who had asked you, in jest, of course, were you still surprised that Bobby Ryan was available at number two that year?
Yeah, I remember. I was.
But they pulled it off, though, right? Like they were able to get something going.
This is all doable. Two things. People have to be flexible and people have to be reasonable. In other words, this is not time for the union to dig in on stuff. It's not time for the league to dig in on stuff. We got to figure out a way to figure out what the cap's going to be with an unprecedented reduction in revenues. technically under the terms of the collective bargaining agreement? Could the league turn to the players and say, well, it's your problem? I don't know. I haven't studied that clause. I don't know if there's a force majeure clause in there or not. I don't know. But it would be a dumb thing to do anyway. Let's figure out how we move the sport forward. We need some flexibility. Everyone's got to be flexible and reasonable. So this is all doable if we are cleared to play. If the authorities say you can go ahead and play, we can figure the rest of it out. But we need that clearance before we can do anything. In the meantime, you've got to make sure you've got buildings available. You got to make sure you got ice making capability available. You got to make sure the union agrees to push back dates for free agency and so on. It's all doable if people are reasonable.
You know who you're dealing with when you call it this time every Thursday morning, a couple of lazy Polish guys in Vancouver that don't know a whole lot. And you let us know that about once a month. So let me ask
That's
you this
subjective
to do our
comment,
job.
Though, right, Pear?
Donald Fehr is going to join us tomorrow morning. What's the one thing you want to know from the head of the NHLPA?
Well, I was on the board of the Sports Lawyers Association with Donald Fehr, so I've known him way longer than people in hockey knew him. I knew him 10 years before anyone in hockey ever heard of him. I actually get along with Don. I like him. He's got a good sense of humor, real bright guy. So I would just ask him about the early days of the Sports Lawyers Association. That's all. I have a good relationship with Don.
But he's got to be pretty – I mean, as you just said, I mean, there's got to be some give on everybody's side here, right? This is not the time to dig in. Is he that type of personality that will with the PA?
No, I think he's reasonable. I know that's a term that labor leaders don't often get tagged with, but I think he is. And I don't think anyone has a choice in this case. If you're not reasonable right now, then you're stupid. Because everything's going to go south if both sides aren't reasonable. Everything's got the capacity to go right into the dumpster here. So everyone's got to be smart. Everyone's got to listen. Everyone's got to be reasonable. And I think Don is.
Yeah, just don't be an idiot. I mean, it's a simple, basic rule in life we should all follow right now.
Well, you guys should start. You should start doing that then, you two.
Oh, sorry. You cut out there a second. What was that?
There it is.
Hey, tell me this, Brian. You know, we talk, you know, fans love to spitball with trades and all that. Was there ever one on the table, like in terms of, you know, rock star notable players that was there for the taking? You've talked in the past about Gretzky and how, you know, he was available to Vancouver, but just the economics did not lend for it. But were there ones that, you know, there were that you had lined up that you didn't pull the trigger on that stand out for you?
No, I mean, there are trades that I could have made that I decided not to. But there's trades where I was in on them and didn't get the player, which, you know, the most notable one is Joe Thornton. We were in hard on Joe Thornton when Boston traded him, and we made it what we thought was a really outstanding offer the morning he got dealt, and we didn't know that they'd already committed to the trade with San Jose. But we stepped up in Anaheim and made what I consider to be a huge offer and a better offer than Boston got at the time. I'm not going to tell you the players involved. But I can tell you one part of it was, I'm going to protect five guys on my team, and you can tell me who else you want. And we had a pretty good team in Anaheim, guys. It was a pretty good team. So if you're only protecting five, that six player is pretty darn good, plus a first, plus a something, you know, like we're going to package it up. So we were talking a meaningful player, first-round pick, and then a couple of kids. And they made the deal with San Jose instead. I was really stoked about that. Michael Connell was a GM, good guy. But I didn't think they shopped him at all. If you're going to trade a player of that magnitude, you got to shop him. You got to see what the best offer is.
Is it similar to, you know, you hear songwriters and you ask them, hey, give us a little bit of the genesis of writing this song. And some of them go, you know what, took me 15 minutes, sat down, had it in my head, it was done. Are there trades that you've been really happy with that actually can happen that quick?
Yeah, we're on the trade deadline. When I traded Sandis Olsalinch to the Rangers, that we had not had any interest in him. No one had expressed interest in him at all, and we had shopped him hard. So I thought, okay, we're not going to be able to make a good deal for Sandis, so we'll keep him. I would rather keep a player than make a terrible deal. And so I did that with Mike Camilleri in Calgary. You know, we got a terrible offer on him from New Jersey, a third-round pick, and I said, no. I'd rather GMs know that I won't make bad deals than just make bad deals and take what you can for a guy. So with Olsalinch, we were sitting there. We had asked for, I think he went for a third. We had asked for a third. We had told a couple teams that were picking higher that we'd take a fourth, and we got no action on him at all. And then 15 minutes before the deadline, Glenn Sather called with the Rangers and said, is Ozolin still available? He had been working on something bigger that fell apart. And I said, yep, third round pick, yep, done. Took about 15 seconds, that phone call. But typically, a trade of any size, it starts with, you know, one conversation, and then you have another and another. A lot of times it'll take a course over certainly several days, but sometimes weeks.
You know, Brian, with Sandis Ozolinch, I mean, he was such a dynamic offensive defenseman, you know, through the 90s. And then that would have been your first year in Anaheim, right, with the Ozolinch team?
Yes.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm looking at his number. He played another 10 years. Now, he only played another couple seasons in the NHL, but you know, played for another half dozen years, you know, back in the KHL.
He had a great career.
Where did he just kind of tail? What happened? Where did he just tail off as a player in the NHL? Because there was a time where there was a guy who gobbled up points on the back end in the NHL.
Yeah, he had some issues when he played for us, and it's well publicized. He got a DUI after the playoffs after the Rangers were eliminated, and he had surgery on his knee. I think he had microfractures in his knee, and I think that was the beginning of the end for him because he was a good guy. Like, we liked him. He was a good teammate. Very popular. But he played another 10 years, like you say, and this guy's about a pack and a half a day smoker. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, geez, really?
But Mario was like that, too, though, at one time. Mario Lemieux, right?
What's that, sorry?
Mario Lemieux was that kind of guy at one time as well. Like, Mario in his prime years was a big smoker long before his health issues.
I didn't know that. I knew Guy Lafleur was. I didn't know Mario was.
There you go. Hey, Berkey, thanks for this. Thanks for sharing some of the stories. Now we know we won't buy you a gift to a local ranch so you can enjoy doing some riding, but a lot of people texting in and appreciating your love for Westerns. Thank you for this. We'll catch up again on Thursday, and stay safe to you and your family until we talk again.
Yep, same back. See you guys.